Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us on a Friday before Halloween and so late in the day. Really appreciate you taking the time to listen to what we have to say this afternoon. And of course, we have a lot to say, especially with how volatile the markets are. So we're going to cover a lot of things. We're going to start out by covering really what happened this last month and what happened today in the markets, for example. We're going to talk about tech earnings and interest rates and inflation. And there's some new retirement limits, some new IRS tax law changes, changes for next year, which I'm going to cover in addition to some planning ideas. And we'll finish up with some actions that we're taking in our portfolios. So with that, I'm going to start with the very first question to Dryden, which is, the one on everyone's mind is really what happened to the markets, to the economy, and so forth since last podcast, which is the end of September. And then what happened today in the markets as well?
Sure. Well, the thing that is still driving the markets, the economy, and everything is interest rates. It's basically interest rates, interest rates, interest rates. Everybody is hyperfixated on the federal funds rate. And not only hyperfixated, it's almost like everybody's the frazzled cat. So everyone's trying to figure out from one moment to the next, what's the Fed going to do? And so anything that's going to affect Federal Reserve decision-making tends to make the market hyper-reactive. And plus, we're having earnings season. And that hyperactivity also shows up in companies. Companies, if they do well, they're overly rewarded. If companies that do poorly, they are generally less rewarded. So I think that one of the key things that we have to pay attention to is between last September 22nd and today, you know, the NASDAQ has been flat and the S&P 500 is up 4%. Now, it has been an arduous and rocky path to what normally would be almost a positive slope, which given the rest of this year, any type of positive slope is good. So the point of the matter is we're in this moment where the economy continues to show resilience and strength, and GDP continues to grow because we have lots of people working, making more money. I'll get into that a little bit later. But the inflation situation and interest rate situation, and we're beginning to get news of things slowing down. So the Fed is beginning to get what it wants, albeit more slowly than it wanted. And you can just look, if you want to get the idea, that the reaction in the market and in the economy is very, very bifurcated. So if you look at home mortgages, you know, the home mortgages or new home mortgages being taken out and stuff like that, they dropped 10%. You know, for a while they're doing okay, and now it's really, really showing up because people are looking at a 7% home mortgage, and I've been talking about this for a long time. And they're going, I just can't do this. And so these applications have fallen off. New, you know, real estate's really beginning, residential, to begin cool off very quickly. So in some ways, bad news is good news, which is kind of what you think about when you're seeing some of these things that have gone off the last 30 days. The market's been crazy volatile. You had moments where, first of all, you had on October the 13th, you had a CPI number come in higher than expected, and people got really worried. It looks like the core was going, and everybody reacted, the market reacted very, very negatively to that because they're going like, oh my gosh, you know, the Fed's going to go 75 basis points in November, 75 basis points in December. It's going to be, you know, it's getting worse and worse and worse. And then what we've seen most recently and what you saw today was when you came out with the data on personal consumption expenditures, and the employment costs, and that's that, they came in at expectations. So what's been happening is everyone's had expectations for a number, and the data's been worse and more inflation. And then so today you got something that came in, oh, wait, this is high. It's not good, but it's not worse than we expected. And so there was some reaction to the market that, okay, maybe things are beginning to take hold. Maybe the Fed will pay attention to this. So we've got, this is a very data-rich season coming up, and I've got a lot to talk about that a little bit later. But if you just want to say what's happened between last month and now, we've had this period of time where you get some bad inflation reads, spooks everybody about what the Fed's doing, and everybody's really waiting on data. You see a company, some companies are doing well in earnings, some companies are coming out beating expectations, some companies are coming out in different expectations, and the market is being hyper-reactive to every piece of news. And I think this is kind of a bottoming situation. That doesn't mean I can call the bottom or say that it's you know, all blue skies from here. But I think that we're at this situation where we're kind of bouncing around an area that's close to a moment where people can at least think about how does it get better? When does the pain end? And I'll cover that here a little bit later, Layla. But you wanted to talk briefly about some of the things in the tax law that's coming up and all these other, you know, further issues that people need to be paying attention to as we get into the end of the year.
Yes, I thought we'd change, you know, get a little bit off the market because these are really some good changes. You know, I guess we hate inflation because it's making the Federal Reserve raise interest rates, but inflation is benefiting us from other ways. First of all, if you haven't heard already, Social Security benefits next year are going to go up by a whopping 8.7%. That's a huge increase in people's checks. We thought last year was good. It was 5.7. This next year is going to be 8.7%. And then if you are working and are able to put money in a 401k, if you're under 50, this year you could put $20,500. That's going up by a whopping $2,000. So you'll be able to put $22,500 next year. And then the catch-up provision for people over age 50 is going up to $7,500 from $6,500. So if you're over 50 next year, you're going to be able to contribute $30,000 into your 401k. In addition, what you can put in a defined contribution that went up from $61,000 to $66,000, that's a $5,000 increase. And then in terms of IRA, for the very first time in a long time, that is going up from $6,000 to $6,500. And if you're over 50, that is $7,500. So that's really good. There's also some other catch-up provisions in terms of the simple IRA that went up from $14,000 to $15,500. But here's one that is actually where some planning is, the standard deduction. Okay, as you know, with the Trump tax law, you now have a high standard deduction, so most people don't really get to itemize because they limit the property tax deduction to $10,000. So that is going up for joint taxpayer by $1,800. So that's gone up to $27,700, up from $25,900. And if you're over 65, you get an extra $1,350. So planning here is that if you really are planning to do any charitable deduction, it's going to be harder to deduct those next year. So you might want to start doing them this year. Whatever you're going to do next year, push it up to this year if you're going to itemize. Do more tax charitable contribution this year because next year, with the higher limits, you may not be able to itemize at all and waste your charitable deduction. The other good thing is that the gift tax exclusion, the amount that you can give any person without having estate taxes is going up by $1,000. So this year is $16,000. Next year, you'll be able to give $17,000 for individual. A husband and wife can give twice that, so they can give $34,000. That's up from $32,000. And then the estate tax limits are going up by a whopping $860,000 a year. So basically, it'll be almost $13 million that a member can leave at death or alive without having estate tax payments to the government. So again, it's a really interesting time that we're living in here with this inflation. And these numbers are definitely showing that the IRS, and they're also, in terms of income taxes in general, they've increased the brackets. so that you can make more income without being subject to higher tax bracket. I'll cover those maybe sometime next year as we, you know, because that's like a year away. So with that, I'm going to turn it back to Dryden to talk about the subject of the day, which of course is the markets. But really what I want you to talk about, Dryden, is we've seen, you know, even though some of the companies that are non-tech have done relatively well, you know, company by company in terms of earnings, but tech companies, especially the big giant tech companies, have not reported such great earnings this last week or so. Can you comment on why and what are our thoughts as far as tech?
Sure. So you've had 263 out of the S&P 500 companies report so far. We're midway through earnings season. Interestingly enough, 56% of those companies have beat on sales, 71% have beat on earnings. That's good. And you've had some of the large tech companies have particular problems with headwinds. And so let's talk about headwinds and tailwinds. When interest rates in the United States are significantly greater than interest rates elsewhere in the world, everybody wants to send their money here. Therefore, to do that, they have to buy dollars. That drives the price of the U.S. dollar up. Well, that's a problem when companies that have a lot of foreign business have to repatriate those foreign sales, right, into U.S. dollars. So if you take a look at Amazon, which is an example, what happened there was Amazon had all-time sales. They had great sales, were good, everything was good, but their profits were down because they had to repatriate all their overseas sales and overseas currencies into dollars, and that really kind of took it down by about 5%. So what happens is the big companies, the Apples, the Amazons, the Googles, Metas in there, who do a lot of international trade, if they have business overseas, it is actually a headwind to their earnings when they're reporting. So I think you've got to look underneath these numbers. And it's not that sales in the U.S. were bad. It's just that the sales that they had overseas were worth so much less that at the currency conversion, it brought down their earnings. So I think that's a very important thing for everybody to recognize.
And one of the things that happened just yesterday is for the very first time, the European ECB finally recognized that this is an issue, and they raised their interest rates for the first time by 75 basis points. So they're trying to catch up because they're trying to strengthen their currency so that the dollar could actually go down a bit. And dollar going down is very good for U.S. because it makes our goods cheaper. And of course, if you have international companies or multinational companies that sell outside the U.S., it's good for the dollar to go lower. It's not good if you're traveling because your dollar will buy less.
We said a few months ago, if you're planning on traveling, go to Europe at the end of this year. And so, and many of our clients have. They've actually taken that advice, which is a good thing. But I think these are headwinds, tailwinds. So the high dollar is a headwind to international companies, and it's also a headwind to a lot of these tech companies. Now, but recognize as we get into next year, when we talk about interest rates and Fed and leveling out and those things, that begins to level off. It becomes less of a headwind, and so the fundamentals are still pretty darn good with the U.S. economy. And I want to share that we're beginning to see things slow. The Fed's getting what they want, but you have to counter that with the fact that more people are working, making more money than ever before. And if we get a labor force participation rate back to what it was pre-pandemic, you would be adding $198 billion a year worth of additional payroll here in the United States. That's like adding the entire country of Hungary into our economy. So when people are worried and talking about the fears of recession, I think it's really in inflation eating into stuff. I think it's important that while inflation is there, while inflation is affecting stuff, you have more and more people actually having a real job. And in total, you have an economy that's creating more income, more real income, not less. And I think that we have to kind of sometimes step back and take a look and see what the numbers are really telling us. So it's not a bleak and horrible picture. The thing that is important that's affecting the markets, that's affecting everybody's psyche, is what's the Fed going to do with interest rates? I'm going to take a minute on here to walk you through it. We are about to hit a very active calendar, and it's going to affect the markets. And some of this is really, really good. So, Layla, why don't you walk through those key dates, and then I'll come back and talk about what all that means. Go ahead.
Okay. So the next big one, it's just next week. Okay, the Federal Reserve on November 2nd meets. The expectations there is 75 basis points. That's already baked in the market, but that's not the number that really bothers us, or is what they say. And Dryden's going to cover that. What they say at that meeting will tell us what to expect at the next meeting. And then, of course, right after that, the next week right after that is we have the election. November 8th is the election. Everyone knows that. And what happens to the election is going to also have an effect. If history is any indication, for the last 20 elections in a row, regardless of who wins the midterm elections, the market has what? Kind of
up about 8%. So
right.
Midterm elections go up. So we're breaking into these numbers. On the 2nd of November, you have a Fed meeting. Everybody knows they're going to raise, everybody's convinced they're going to raise 75 basis points. The important thing is, what's the Fed's comment about the future? They're going to say, what are they going to say? We're going to continue to raise until we stop inflation, or they're going to say, we need to be data dependent. That's very important. When they say that, they're giving a hint. I've been talking now for 9 months about how important the word pause is. If you want to think about, when is the market going to recover? When is this pain going to begin to stop? That is when you begin to see the word pause, hear the word pause. The Fed will stop raising so much. And when I'm defining pause, folks, I'm saying the direction of a pause is when the next interest rate move is lower than the previous one. So we're going to say we 75 in November. Maybe 50 in December, maybe 75. That's this next date, right? That's November the 10th when you get another big CPI read. So here's what's going to happen. November the 2nd, you've got the Fed meeting. November the 8th, you have the election, right, Layla? And the data says you're going to go, typically you go up about 8% after the election to the end of the year. So that's a catalyst. In there, and then you have the meeting on the 10th.
And then you have another. So this is the very first time this year we're going to have two CPI meetings. Actually, we did that in summer too, but in this very short term time, we have two CPI numbers. So we're going to have a CPI number on November 10th, and then another CPI number on December 13th, before the Fed meets again on December 14th. So the indication is we're definitely seeing, reasonably oil prices. We're seeing cracks in the housing. We're seeing these high interest rates. So the market is looking and saying, even if we have a same number or a cooling number or even a little bit of a high number in CPI on November 10th, the December 13th is really going to be the big number, because right after that date is when they meet. And if they go down to 50 basis point, what happens, Dryden?
Well, I think at the moment, whatever they say in November, whatever they do in December is going to really set the tone, right? Because if they go 75 in December, they're going to have to talk about when they're going to stop. Because at that point, they'll be getting very close to this, what we call the terminal rate. The terminal rate is the rate at which they stop doing this, right? They can only raise, they can't raise it forever, right? And the rate at which they stop doing it. So we think that it's going to be 450, 475 to 5. And so you're about to hit that. So what happens in December is either we go 75 and then they have to talk about, all right, it's going to be 50-50-50, or they say we'll do 50 in December and then maybe it's 50-50-50 for a while and then 25. The really key important thing is, how do we look at interest rates going into 2023? This is very significant for everybody listening to this call. You have something now that you have not had in a decade. And that is a real interest rate. We can get two-year treasuries, and some of you have them in your accounts already, okay? that are paying a 4% coupon. That's good because we haven't had the ability to have that in a while. And so you're going to see in the portfolios and what's out there is you're going to begin to see interest rates being able to be earned on the capital that you have. That makes the long-term investing time horizon for everybody who's thinking about saving for retirement or living in retirement much better. We now have something we haven't had really since 2009, which is a market interest rate similar to that which we've had most of the last six decades. And so these higher interest rates are not necessarily always a bad thing. The important thing is the transition of getting there. And that transition is very close to being over. This pain that everyone's going through is about change. It's the change of a regime of very low interest rates to a more normalized interest rate. And this transition has been painful, but it is something that will end. We think it's going to end somewhere between December and March. You know, whatever they do, they're going to get to the terminal rate somewhere in there, right? And then they're going to probably pause for a very long period of time throughout the rest of the year. So you're looking at next year, a higher interest rate on the money that you have. You can get a 4, which is good, right? You're going to look at a more stable environment than this year, because people are going to know, companies can understand their capital costs. Right now, if you have no idea what the interest rate is going to be for the rest of the year, you can't plan. Companies can't plan. Households can't plan. So no, it's too much uncertainty. By the time we get into first quarter next year, you're going to have a lot more certainty. And the market likes certainty. The market likes a divided government, right? We do better when there's divided government. Why? Because they're pretty sure nothing's going to get done. And the first rule of government is do no harm, I think. And so I think that we have all of these things coming together here at the end of this quarter and the beginning of next quarter to at least get us to a place where some of this volatility can abate. And that will take some of the pain away. So I think we're getting there. We're close. It's going to be a little bit of a crazy month. So buckle up. November is going to be a little crazy. December can be a little crazy, but probably not any worse than what you've already lived through. So we're headed on the other side of this stuff. It's just going to take a little bit longer. We're probably 200 days into this bear market. Most bear markets are over at about 300 days. So I think that's the best way to try to put a bow around that part of this. And in the end, really, the fundamentals of the economy still are pretty good. Slowing down, but that's exactly what the Fed wants us to do. But the fact that we still have strong employment numbers, sales numbers look good, earnings numbers are not coming off as bad as people are talking about. So you know, just pay attention to the November the 10th data. It's probably going to be a little ugly. That's going to make the market pretty volatile, but we're prepared for that. We're watching that. We recognize that that's a temporary set of circumstances. So if you get a bad read, don't panic, right? It's just one of those pieces of information we get.
In the meantime, what we're doing is we're really looking at the taxable accounts, and we're going to tax harvest, you know, some of the losses, especially, you know, if we have a unit investment trust. We can exchange it to a different one and kind of take some of the losses. So we're gonna, you know, like I tell my clients all day long, you know, we have a lemon right now. Let's make some lemonade. Let's harvest some of the losses so we have it next year when we have the gains and we can rebalance the portfolio even more so. So we'll be very actively looking at the accounts this next month. We're also gonna be, like Dryden says, adding some more treasuries. As for the fixed income components of the portfolio. If any of you have this happens a lot more in what we call a growth and income allocations or income moderate growth. If you have more of an aggressive growth and you want to revisit any of that model with the advisors, please talk to us so we can revisit to see how you're allocated to be better prepared for the next year.
The thing we're doing right now is I think we have a pretty good view on what's going to happen next year. And we know that some of the spread tightening cycle will end next year. And you're going to get good comps for good comparisons for earnings. You're going to continue to have a meaningful growth rate. If we have a recession, it's probably shallow and you're kind of done with it before you even know you're in it. But all of those things will put us in a position where the activity that we take between now and the end of the year is to position accounts and everybody for a much better 2023. And we take the actions now for what we think next year is going to be like.
Remember, we're all long-term investors. I know we focus quite a bit on this date coming up and that date coming up and so forth, because I know many of you are conscious of what's happening right now, and we're looking at data daily, 24/7. But remember, this too shall pass. Bear market do end. They do end.
They do. And I forgot to bring something up, and I'm very, very sorry. So the other thing that's very interesting about coming up in 2023, everything's been driven by the Fed, right? You got 12 people on the board of the Federal Reserve, and that's been the whole story for the market ever since February. Really, you had the war and then you had the Fed, and that's it. Everything else is a derivative of those two things. And what's very interesting is the Fed's been hawkish, raising interest rates very, very aggressively. And the thing is the jury rotates at the beginning of the year. Some of the most hawkish members who are really wanting to have these very high interest rates, which have driven the stock market down, are no longer going to be voting members next year. So we think about the psychology of individuals. You've heard me talk about that. But the makeup of the Fed Board of Governors does change a little bit. And if you look at the behavior of those individuals, we go from it's still a hawkish, like wanting to raise interest rates Fed, but not near as much. So it's interesting, all these little nuanced things that affect the interest rates and the Federal Reserve, which then in turn affect interest rates and housing and markets and everything, and you know, everybody's opinion and all of these kind of things. So I just think that we're getting ready to set up for a massive amount of rapid data between now and about the middle of December. But then we move into next year where people and companies will be closer to the end of the Fed tightening cycle. Companies can allocate capital. People can know what their budgets are. Consumers can move forward. And again, we continue to have a very strong labor market. And although we have some inflation, I want to remind everybody, I can see who's on this call, and I can tell you, for the vast majority of your adult economic life, which is when you turn 30 or have your first child until now, you've had a federal funds rate above 4%. You've had an inflation rate above 3%. And it's been pretty good. It's just the last 10 years of the abnormal period of time, not the whole rest of the decade. So we're going to get back to a normalized relationship of things. You're going to kind of return to the old normal, if you will. And that won't be so bad.
With that, we want to wish you all a fantastic Halloween weekend. And enjoy it with the family. And our next podcast is going to be back to Thursday. It'll be November 17th. Thursday, November 17th at 3 o'clock. We'll talk to you then. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. Opinions voiced in this material are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. Historical performance is no guarantee of future results. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested into directly. This information is not intended to be a substitute for specific individualized tax advice. We suggest that you discuss your specific tax issues with a qualified tax advisor. The economic forecasts set forth may not develop as predicted, and there can be no guarantee that strategies promoted will be successful. All investing involves risk, including loss of principal. No strategy assures success or protects against loss. All company names noted herein are for educational purposes only and not an indication of trading intent or a solicitation of their products or services. Layla Pence is a registered representative with and securities and advisory services offered through LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA/SIPC. Financial planning offered through Pence Wealth Management, a registered investment advisor. Dryden Pence is a registered representative with and offers securities and advisory services through LPL Financial, LLC, LPL Financial, member FINRA/SIPC and a registered investment advisor. Mr. Pence may offer financial planning services through Pence Wealth Management, PWM, a registered investment advisor. Pence Wealth Management, PWM, is a financial services practice within LPL Financial LLC, LPL Financial, comprised of multiple financial professionals that provide a series of services including personal investment advisory, third-party managed advisory and brokerage services. Pence Wealth Management Incorporated is an investment advisor registered with the state of California to provide financial planning services. The financial professionals affiliated with PWM are registered with and offer securities and investment advisory services through LPL Financial, member FINRA/SIPC and a registered investment advisor. As of December 31, 2021, the total assets serviced by PWM through LPL Financial consist of over $1.95 billion in advisory and $383 million in brokerage assets. PWM and LPL Financial are separate entities.